and fury like the world has never seen.
This is The Takeaway. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Todd Zwillick. Fire and fury. It's the phrase President Donald Trump used to threaten North Korea back in August when he spoke from his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Now, America has spent a weekend with the fire and fury of Michael Wolff's gossipy book about life inside the Trump White House and the president's fitness for office. Well, the president's been tweeting and attacking that book. His staff gave contentious and angry television interviews. But here's the question for this Monday. Which fire and fury is the president of the United States focused on? The book or the real-life, highly consequential developments on the North Korean peninsula today? In a minute, we're going to talk to David Sanger of the New York Times with a new story on North Korea's nuclear program and how U.S. intelligence services missed the North's progress on missiles and failed to predict the nuclear threat that we see today. Fire and fury, indeed. But first, signs that at least some of the fury could be subsiding, for now at least. There's been an ever so slight thawing in the relationship between North and South Korea this week. The Winter Games are coming up, of course, in Pyeongchang, South Korea, and sports diplomacy is bringing North and South together for talks today on how to get more North Korean athletes at those games, a show of Korean unity, at least for the television cameras. But no one thinks that the Olympics is really what's at stake here. Why has the North warmed things up now? What does the South want from these talks beyond a successful Olympics? And where is the United States just days after President Trump assured the world that his nuclear button is bigger and more potent than Kim Jong-un's? We turn to someone now with some answers.
My name is Sung-Yoon Lee. I'm a professor of Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University.
Professor Lee told me why this warming between North and South shouldn't come as too much of a surprise.
Sports diplomacy is always a sexy event. It does wonders in melting a bit the mutual negative frozen images between two adversaries. And after a triumphant banner ballistic year last year, it makes sense for North Korea to come down a rung or two on the ladder of escalation and reach out to South Korea. Why? Because South Korea is eager to engage North Korea and to de-escalate tension. In the past, South Korea has given North Korea over $1 billion a year when North Korea would send athletes and hundreds of North Korean female cheerleaders to South Korea. So North Korea wants to get the U.S. to relax sanctions, and the way to do that is to get South Korea to take the lead in relaxing sanctions and returning to subsidizing North Korea.
And this seems to go to the suspicion that many diplomats in the West have, which is that Kim Jong-un is really trying to drive a bit of a wedge between South Korea and the United States, trying to divide that relationship. Just as this warming between the North and the South comes on the same day, Kim Jong-un's statements towards the United States and towards President Trump were particularly belligerent. Do you see a wedge strategy here?
Absolutely. And it's sort of the ancient Chinese strategy of using one to defeat the other enemy, using barbarian against barbarian, as the Chinese say. It makes sense for North Korea to drive a wedge between South Korea and the United States. And the ultimate goal is to, through a combination of nuclear threat and periodically dangling carrots before its neighbors, to get the U.S. to downgrade its alliance with South Korea, its support for South Korea, and one day to evict the 28,000 or so U.S. troops stationed in South Korea. What would that mean? It would mean North Korea would gain in terms of the balance of power in the region, and North Korea would be better positioned to bully, censor, isolate, and perhaps even one day prevail over that other Korean state, one that is far more legitimate, attractive, rich, and so on.
And that's the long view. Let's go back to the short view for just a moment, Professor. What does South Korea want out of this new round of talks? Of course, they want the best Olympic Games possible. They would like a de-escalation in tensions. What else are they looking for?
Well, South Korea, of course, has grown very rich. South Korea is arguably a singular success story in nation building in the post-1945 era. And what that means is South Korea simply has too much on the line, too much to lose in continuing to escalate tension with North Korea. So, yes, South Korea wants to change the dynamics, diffuse tension, and in the short term, North Korean participation in the Winter Olympics would really jazz up the games. It would gain a lot more attention from the international media. Perhaps even the Chinese president or the Japanese prime minister may attend the opening ceremony. It would raise revenue for South Korea, spike up, of course, TV ratings, and create this illusion that inter-Korean reconciliation is now finally here. When you have hundreds of North Korean cheerleaders dancing and clapping hands in sync, rooting on South Korean athletes and, God forbid, even perhaps American athletes, then the people are mesmerized.
Well, Professor, I can't help but noticing before we let you go that you're describing a dynamic, even if it's just around these Olympic Games, where a lot of countries seem pleased with this thaw, North Korea, South Korea, Russia, China, Japan. And there's one country that might not be terribly pleased with it, and that's the United States. Are we isolated here?
A little bit in the short term. And because the U.S. is quite wary of the South Korean tendency to really lunge at North Korea, embrace North Korea, and compromise principles, the United States is a bit isolated. The more Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, comes across as well-meaning, a bumbling, paranoid, incompetent leader perhaps, but basically well-meaning and seeking peace. And at the same time, the more that the U.S. president comes across as bellicose, motivated by machismo, it all works in North Korea's favor. So I think the correct response would not be to engage North Korea in a war of words.
Professor Sung-Yoon Lee, professor of Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, there's the story on some Olympic-inspired de-escalation on the Korean Peninsula, but you can't get to de-escalation without a whole lot of escalation first. And there are strong signs now that the United States failed to predict critical parts of that escalation. The barrage of missile tests that over the last year have given North Korea the ability to deliver a warhead to all corners of the United States, and what it appears now is that U.S. intelligence services missed it. David Sanger is national security correspondent for the New York Times. Hi, David.
Great to be with you, Todd.
David, it's great to have you back. Look, you write that the U.S. intelligence community knew that North Korea would eventually get to the point of being able to deliver a nuclear warhead to the United States, but got the speed and the timing of that delivery very, very wrong. How did they manage to miss the fact that Kim Jong-un was marching forward so quickly?
Well, you know, what's remarkable about this story, Todd, is it's not your ordinary intelligence failure. It's not simple by any means. What's notable when you go back in the record is that if you go back as far as 2000, so 18 years ago, the National Intelligence Council report suggested that North Korea would have an operative ICBM that could be able to reach the United States, an intercontinental ballistic missile, roughly 2015, 2016. And then in 2004, they moved that out to 2019, 2020. Well, pretty good work when you're dealing from more than a decade and a half distance, right? But when they got up close, and just this past year, as President Trump came in, they told the Trump team that the ability to reach the United States with accuracy would still be 2020, maybe even as far as 2022. And in fact, they missed these tests of these Russian-provided or missiles with Russian-provided engines that were so successful this year. And partly that's because it's very hard to get inside the head of Kim Jong-un or inside his inner circle. And that was sort of the tactical failure. They had the strategic direction right. They had the timing wrong.
North Korea has also changed its own technology, solid rocket fuel, harder to detect. Did the technical side of this help lead to a U.S. intelligence failure here?
Well, the technical side is fascinating because the big question has always been, how much can North Korea produce by itself and how much is it reliant on outside suppliers? And the reliance in the past on outside suppliers has been an enormous help to the U.S. The CIA and other intelligence agencies has for years poisoned the supply chain with bad parts thing, and very typical kind of technique that was also used against Iran. There have been, as we reported early last year, cyber attacks directed at the missile program, and those were actually quite effective against an intermediate-range missile called the Musudan that had an 88% failure rate until Kim Jong-un killed the program last fall, or a year ago fall. And then what happened was they shifted very quickly to this new design of these much larger liquid-fueled engines at a time that we thought they were going toward solid fuels. And it looks like a lot of that is indigenously produced. And the question is, did we miss their ability to go build up the infrastructure to do it? It's a very difficult thing to do. It took the U.S. years when we did it in the 1950s, and suggests that they've probably had a good deal of outside technical help, probably former Soviet engineers.
Well, David, you talked to the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, who acknowledged that the U.S. had a lapse here, at least in this part of the intelligence. The CIA director, Mike Pompeo, basically denied there was any lapse here. But what about the real impact? You made it clear the United States sort of had the long-term trajectory of the missile program right. It missed the acute details of exactly when North Korea would reach ICBM capability. Even if we had that second part right, would we have been able to stop it? I guess the question is, what difference does it make?
Well, it's a really good question, Todd. So there would have been a series of policy decisions that would have had to have been made, not by President Trump, but by President Obama. And I think one of the big questions here is why President Obama, at a time that he was focused so intently on the Iranian nuclear program, didn't spend more time on the North Korea issue. And partly that's because they saw an opportunity to stop Iran before it got any weapons. North Korea, of course, already had weapons, even if they couldn't deliver them to the U.S., and they viewed that program as something that was mostly irreversible. Now, if they had known earlier, what could they have done? Well, they could have thickened missile defenses earlier on, if you have trust that those work. Some kinds do, some kinds don't. They might have taken the extraordinary steps of closing up the loopholes and sanctions that President Trump has done pretty well this past year, and done that during the Obama years. There's no particular reason it couldn't have been done earlier with better warning. And they also could have accelerated those kind of cyber attacks that I described, which worked in some cases and don't appear to be working now.
The story of how the U.S. intelligence services appeared to have missed just how far along Kim Jong-un was in being able to deliver a nuclear weapon to the United States. David Sanger with the New York Times has the story, and it's quite a story in the pages of that paper. David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Happy New Year.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, and German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel, BABBEL.com.
And Staples, offering storage solutions for business, including file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins for getting organized. More at Staples stores or Staples.com. Staples, it's pro time.